Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. It's Monday, May the 7th. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Abubakar Jallo. We are coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
Coming up on the show, a South Sudanese rebel opposition group merges with the ruling party.
I would therefore like to announce on behalf of the SPLM-IO structures and the entire membership of the party, the dissolution of the SPLM-IO organs, including chapters, and declare them to be united with the SPLM.
And residents of a village in Nigeria where 40 people were massacred by unknown gunmen are devastated by the incident.
With all the security in this country, with all the military forces, these people still filter into that community, kill people, and go scot-free.
These are just some of the stories that we have lined up for you. But first, here's a chance to listen to what has been happening around the world.
This is DW News with me, Crispin Mwakideu. A glimmer of hope for peace is shining in South Sudan after the SPLM in opposition merged with the ruling SPLM party. South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Deng Gai, said the dissolution of his party is meant to give the peace process more impetus.
The unification of SPLM will give more power, more spirit, more energy to the party to strike on the areas of making peace a lasting resort. The SPLM, the new rejuvenated SPLM, will be fighting tribalism. We reconcile communities. This is very important. We stop child abduction, cattle rustling. We shall continue with the disarmament of the civilian so that people are secure.
South Sudan plunged into a civil war in December 2013 following a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and former Vice President Riek Machar. Tens of thousands have been killed and nearly 2 million have been displaced, according to the United Nations. The biggest cholera vaccine drive in history is underway in Africa, aimed at reining in a spate of outbreaks across the continent, the UN and charity alliance Gavi said on Monday. More than 2 million people will receive the oral cholera vaccine as part of five major campaigns in Malawi, Nigeria, South Sudan, Uganda and Zambia. According to the World Health Organization, cholera infects 1.3 million to 4 million people every year and kills an estimated 21,000 to 143,000, mainly in poor countries. Vladimir Putin was sworn in this Monday for his fourth term as Russian president. In his first speech after taking the oath of office, Putin promised to boost living standards across the country and vowed to defend Russia from any aggression.
Russia is a strong, active, influential participant in the international life. Security and defense capability of the country are reliably ensured. We will continue to pay necessary and constant attention to these issues in the future.
Before Putin was sworn in, opposition leader Alexei Navalny and about 1,600 of his supporters were detained as protests were held across the country over the weekend against Putin. You're listening to DW News from Bonn, Germany. Lebanon's Prime Minister Saad Hariri has acknowledged that his Future Movement Party lost seats in this week's parliamentary elections. Hariri blamed the loss on a new electoral law and a performance that wasn't up to the standard. Meanwhile, Hezbollah has declared victory in the election with just over half of the vote cast. The US views the heavily armed Hezbollah Shiite movement, which has close links to Iran, as a terrorist group. The foreign ministers of Germany and France on Monday made a joint plea to US President Donald Trump not to withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal. The agreement, which was struck under the Obama administration, lifted sanctions on Tehran in return for halting its nuclear program. Trump has, however, threatened to tear apart the deal by May the 12th, arguing it doesn't do enough to stop Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons. For more news and information, visit dw.com. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jallo.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. To start off, we'll welcome our Facebook listeners, Chinyere Ezaefe, listening from Lagos, and Priest Musogong. Keep listening, we have a lot for you.
That's it. Thank you, Zipporah, for that. And in a short while, we will be going to the massacre in Nigeria. But first, let's begin in South Sudan, where First Vice President Taban Deng Gai has merged his opposition party with the ruling party. The Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, that's SPLM-IO, which he used to head, will now be a part part of the ruling party, the SPLM, headed by President Salva Kiir.
Taban Dengai says his move is an effort to implement a deal agreed by factions of the SPLM 3 years ago to unite the ruling party. Wake Simon Udu reports from Juba.
I would therefore like to announce on behalf of the SPLM-IO structures and the entire membership of the party the dissolution of the SPLM-IO organs, including chapters, and declare them to be united with the SPLM, the historic liberation party in the Republic of South Sudan.
That is First Vice President Taban Dengai, chairman of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, or AMI, in opposition, addressing journalists this morning in Juba. The SPLM-IO is the second largest party in the government so far, with 33% shares in the transitional government, which is equivalent to 10 cabinet posts. Guy's dissolution of his party comes amid increasing regional and international pressure for South Sudan's leaders to restore peace across the country. He was formerly loyal to rebel leader Riek Machar, who founded the SPLM-IO rebel movement, but currently in exile. Guy controversially took charge of the remains of the party following renewed fighting between Machar's forces and President Salva Kiir's soldiers in July 2016 in the capital Juba. Machar was forced to flee Juba, hence splitting his SPLM-IO movement into two, one under him and another led by Taban Dengai. Guy says his decision to merge forces with the Kiir's SPLM party is to implement a resolution passed last week by a joint meeting of three factions of the party.
Unification of SPLM will give more power, more spirit, more energy to the party to strike on the areas of making peace a lasting resort. The SPLM, the new rejuvenated SPLM, will be fighting tribalism. We reconcile communities, this is very important. We stop child abduction, caterously. We shall continue with the disarmament of the civilian so that people are secure.
The dissolution of Guy's SPLM-IO faction has been viewed as a positive step towards peace in the country, but this may disrupt the peace process led by the East African body IGAD, which is scheduled to take place this month in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
Wake Simon Wood compiled that report from the South Sudanese capital of Juba.
And we did ask on Facebook, could this mark the end of the conflict in South Sudan? Roger Alfred wrote on our Facebook page, only an all-inclusive negotiated political settlement backed by strong mechanism will end the conflict. The government and the opposition groups are resuming talks May 17th in Addis Ababa. They will likely reach an agreement given the mounting pressure from the local and international community.
And Roger Alfred went on to say, without a powerful impartial monitoring mechanism and diplomatic backing from the region and the international community that will punish or sanction pact violators, the agreement will yet again collapse, leading the country back to another war, even a catastrophic one.
So we hope that will not happen. Keep writing us your comments. And now to a story making headlines around the world. Vladimir Putin was today sworn in for another 6 years as Russian president. It will be his fourth term since he took power over 10 years ago.
Now, his inauguration comes 2 months after more than 70% of voters backed him in an election in which he had no serious contenders. Our DW correspondent Emily Sharwin has been speaking to DW Sarah Kelly and started by describing the celebrations in Moscow.
So in 2012, there was this famous motorcade that basically took Vladimir Putin through empty streets, which were closed off ahead of his inauguration. And people really accused him of being kind of out of touch, of that being an image of him being out of touch. And this year, they did away with that. The whole ceremony was a little bit more subdued. It still obviously included some pomp in the Kremlin Palace there, but they very much showed him as a man of the people and as someone who's willing to get his hands dirty. At the beginning, when we saw Vladimir Putin first in the ceremony, he was actually at his desk in the Kremlin working just in his shirt, and he kind of put on his jacket and started his trip towards the Kremlin Palace. And also this year, there are more guests than there were last time as well. So kind of, again, showing him to be in touch with the people. And it was also interesting to see that after the ceremony, ceremony, Vladimir Putin met with a lot of young people outside. That obviously is an attempt to show that he's in touch with the future generation.
We also know that we saw protests this weekend ahead of Putin's inauguration ceremony. Just generally speaking, what is the mood among Russians as Putin begins his fourth term?
Well, those protests that we saw over the weekend, Sarah, were very widespread. They were across Russia. There were 90 cities that were involved, and people came out under the motto, "He's not our czar," obviously referring to Putin there. And ahead of this inauguration, all the pomp of the inauguration ceremony, and there was a big crackdown on those protesters, over 1,500 arrests. But overall, I think the majority of people in Russia do continue to support Putin. In the election in March, he won over 75% of the vote, so really a landslide there. And I think the majority of people here do continue to support him.
Emily Sharwin in Moscow. Now back to the African continent. Villagers of Benin Gwari in Kaduna State are still in shock and are coming to terms with the weekend massacre that left at least 45 people dead. The attack followed an escalation of violence involving cattle theft, robbery and kidnappings.
The attackers are said to be armed bandits from neighbouring Zamfara State who are retaliating the death of 13 people in their region a week ago. The locals there have condemned the killings of innocent citizens and want the federal government to step in and end the attacks. Muhammad Alamin with more from Nigeria.
Benin Gwari has witnessed several attacks since the beginning of the year, which has left at least 100 people dead. The attacks are mainly a fight for resources between nomadic herders and sedentary farmers. The locals have condemned killings, which they say have been going on for some time now.
These are human beings we are talking about. I mean, with all the security in this country, with all the military forces, these people still filter into that community, kill people, and go scot-free. This thing has been going on and has been going on unabated. It is something that if the country cannot handle, we should seek the support of international community.
We are not happy what happened in Benin Gwari because they are killing some people, our innocent people, and this thing is no good.
It is due to the negligence of the government. That's the truth. Supposedly, the government have to dig deeply into the root of the causes of the conflict.
Many people in the region are now living in fear, as Dubair Idris Abdurraoub, the spokesperson of Benin Gwari Emirate, explains.
People are in a state of shock and fear because these are gruesome murders of innocent civilians. The problem is lack of proactive action on the side of the government, because the government of Kaduna State needs to synergize with other security agencies and also with the neighboring states.
So far, some 200 police officers and 10 patrol vehicles have since been deployed to the area. The Kaduna State Governor Nasiru El-Rufai says the federal government also planned to deploy permanent army battalion in the troubled area.
Muhammad Alamin reporting from Nigeria.
We have a comment here from Alhaji Long John who says the priority of every government should be to ensure the safety of its citizens, lives and property, but this current administration only sees second term as their priority.
Favour Demshi says that is why we are looking up to you in 2019 to change this. It's sad that these killings are everywhere.
A user going by the name of Atiku Abubakar says Nigeria's former vice president during Olusegun Obasanjo's presidency wrote on Twitter, "It worries me that there is no longer respect for the sanctity of life in our dear country." By the way, this is actually a Twitter comment by former Nigerian vice president Atiku Abubakar. He says, "I am heartbroken to learn that scores of precious lives have been massacred in Benin Gwari, Kaduna State."
Rosie Petals replied to him and said, "Don't wait until you become president of Nigeria. You can start now in your little way to improve our security."
And we have someone says, "Youth for Atiku, the way Nigerians are being killed on a daily basis is inhumane and ungodly. They are now doing this as if it is their right to kill their fellow human beings, and the security agencies are not doing anything about it." Thanks for your responses. you are just joining us, welcome to DW's Africa Link, and I am Abubakar Jallo.
With me, Zipora Nyambura. Remember, Africa Link is also live on Facebook via DW Africa. Check it out and drop your comments.
Now, coming up in this half of Africa Link, human immune system that is supposed to protect you from diseases is attacking you and making you sick. We meet a group of people in Ghana that are supporting one another with this disease that is known as autoimmune conditions.
It's been a life-changing experience, that is, being a lady living with a condition that you were thinking you are the only person living with such a thing.
I went through 2.5 years before I finally got diagnosed. And after diagnosis, they tell you this is what you have. Finally finding out that there is a support group was a relief.
Remember, we also have our dose of your weekend sports actions with Samson Omale.
That's right, Zipora. But first, before, let's head to Somalia, where it is reported that about 2 million trees are cut annually for illegal charcoal trade. Between 2011 and 2017, it is estimated that about 8.2 million trees were cut down to make charcoal, which means that a tree is cut down every 30 seconds, Zipora, every 30 seconds.
Yeah.
The UN says the illegal trade creates around $10 million in annual revenue to the Al-Shabaab militant group, which illegally tax these exports.
And now there are fears that the country is slowly turning into a desert and causing periodic droughts. The Somali government is now calling for international cooperation to stop the illegal export of charcoal from the country. DW's Andrew Asike visited some of the charcoal trading areas near Mogadishu, Somalia, and filed this report.
On the way to Mogadishu from Kismayo to Bulgabo and Barawe, one can spot stockpiles of charcoal. The piles cast shadows on the roads, shielding motorists from the scorching sun. People are busy packing charcoal onto lorries as other vehicles depart for the ports. One of the traders, Hassan Omar, says it is the main source of livelihood.
We cut trees because of the problems that we are facing. In our country, it is next to impossible to get employed. Look around us. There is no river close to us. The closest is 20 kilometers away from here. If we had farms and water, we could have planted something, and that could have provided us with a way to earn a living. But in such an arid area, what will you grow and how can you survive? The only way is to cut the trees. They are our cash crops.
Omar says that Al-Shabaab militants come for payments from them time to time as they operate in areas in which they control. The Somali government and the UN says this revenue is helping Al-Shabaab finance its terrorist operations in Somalia and the region. Aden Guru, a former charcoal trader who has seen the devastating effects on his country, which is slowly turning into a desert, tells me that he is now supporting the government and the United Nations initiative to ban charcoal trade.
Without environment, you know, there is no life. I urge the government to take action and stop this, you know, smuggling of charcoal from our country to Saudi Arabia, to Arab land. Al-Shabaab, if they miss a way to sell these charcoal, obviously they will stop.
At the opening of a two-day United Nations-supported summit on charcoal in Mogadishu today, Madi Mohamed Guled, Somali's Deputy Prime Minister, called on the International African and Middle Eastern Cooperation for support in stopping illegal charcoal trade. I caught up with Juliet Beer, the Director of the United Nations Environment Programme, who sheds light on possible solutions to stop the illegal charcoal trade in Somalia.
One of the causes of unsustainable charcoal production and consumption is also poverty. If you want to find an adequate solution, you have really to look at the root causes, one of which is poverty. Addressing poverty, addressing livelihood will be one of the solutions. Investment opportunity for business will be also something to look into.
The UN says that the production, use, and illegal trade of charcoal is affecting the economy, health, and aggravates an already delicate humanitarian situation in Somalia. The destruction of trees for charcoal has led to the degradation of land, destruction of ecosystems, and, as a result, caused greater chances of floods and drought in Somalia.
Andrew Asike with that report.
And on Facebook, we've been asking, will this mark the end of Al-Shabaab's source of revenue in Somalia? couple of responses there.
Yeah, that's a good question. Dubo Jello wrote on Twitter and said, put the Kenya Armed Forces to work. They are idling in their barracks and camps in Somalia, engaging in charcoal trade with Al-Shabaab as a part-time job.
And Farah Jama says the United Arab Emirates still support Al-Shabaab through Somalia's illicit charcoal trade. You are born in our forest by your shisha smoking habit. Well, just so you know, these are comments of our listeners, not ours. Particularly.
Yeah, for sure. Niamba says French companies have almost wiped out the tropical forest in the provinces of Gabon, Cameroon and Central Africa Republic, yet no one ever sees it. They only see the wrong of poor villagers.
Thanks for those comments.
Health check.
Autoimmune conditions are hardly spoken about in parts of Africa because they're difficult to detect and only manifest at a devastating level. The disease, which is caused by immune system defects, could lead to brain damage, kidney and other organ failures.
Some had to endure joint pains, leading to paralysis in some instances. In Ghana, one of the country's only two doctors trained in rheumatology is helping to raise awareness and better treatment for patients. Isaac Kaleji has more.
More than a dozen people are gathered in this room in Accra for a support group meeting. They are all suffering from autoimmune health conditions.
The reason why we are raising awareness this month again is to highlight the seriousness of the disease and also make sure that people are well educated so as not to pass judgment to people suffering the condition.
The conditions they suffer from are immune system related. That means the immune system is overworking and fighting against the body in a negative way. It's difficult to see symptoms of this disease at early stages, only until they reach devastating levels. Dr. Jifa Day is one of Ghana's only two doctors who have trained as rheumatologists.
So autoimmune conditions are conditions in which the immune system basically turns against itself and starts fighting itself. And depending on where the immune system has recognized as foreign, that is where it attacks. It's systemic, so any part of the body can be affected. So if it's the brain, some people would come with paralysis. Most of them will present with joint manifestations, which comes with joint swelling and pain, and that can destroy, the immune system can destroy it with time.
It cost over $500 in order to start treatment, and in many cases, that has to be done outside Ghana, a challenge for ordinary Ghanaians. Dr. Day has set up the Rheumatology Initiative to provide some tips and guidance for patients as a way of treating the disease. Predicting who can suffer from the condition and when it strikes is difficult, which means anyone is prone to it. Dr. Day says avoiding stress and bad lifestyle are key to saving lives.
It's difficult to say what preventive measures you can take. There are a few things that we know might predispose you to it. Of course, unhealthy lifestyles, too much stress. I mean, stress is a major factor in causing these diseases to come about there. So you need to try and prevent it. We know that certain foods can also offset the immune system or actually help it to also calm down.
Some of the patients attending the support group session shared their stories and how they are recovering.
It's been a life-changing experience. That is, being a lady living with a condition that you were thinking you are the only person living with such a thing. But joining the group has opened me to a lot of people. Now I know I'm not the only one. And we learn how to manage our conditions better.
Yes, I went through 2.5 years before I finally got diagnosed. And after diagnosis, they tell you this is what you have. Finally finding out that there is a support group was a relief. I found out that there was more to learn. And the doctor kept encouraging us, telling us it was not the end of the road.
Dr. Day says she hopes her efforts can make the needed impact for a start, as well as raise awareness about the disease. Knowledge about the disease is limited, and there are no enough doctors available to provide health care, and there is no specialist center as well.
Isaac Kaleji with that report in Ghana, Accra. Anyways, it's my favorite time of the show. Don't you think so?
Yeah, you look very happy today. What's up?
That's because we are making progress. It was a busy weekend in the German Bundesliga. Now, at the top of the table, Schalke clinched runners-up spot behind Bayern Munich to book their qualification for the Champions League. Obviously, my team is Schalke.
Oh, that's why you are so happy today. Okay, but there were two teams in the lower division that are celebrating after the weekend matches as well. Our sports correspondent Samson Omale has more.
We begin with the good news for German football teams Fortuna Düsseldorf and Nuremberg, who have been promoted to the top flight of the Bundesliga. Fortuna Düsseldorf will be returning to the main league since 2013. A late goal away in Dresden booked their spot with two games to go. And in the main league, Dortmund continued with a dismal performance, losing 2-1 to Mainz, while Schalke defeated host Augsburg 2-1. The CAF Champions League kicked off over the weekend with various group stage matches across the continent. Title holders Wydad Casablanca of Morocco survived a late siege by Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa in Pretoria to force a 1-1 draw. In the other Group C match, Horoya of Guinea kept a 100% away record in the competition this season by edging Port of Togo 2-1 in Lomé. TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo made an impressive start in the Group B by whipping fellow former African champions Entete Sative of Algeria 4-1 in Lubumbashi. Still on soccer, Arsene Wenger was given a hero's welcome and a memorable departure during his final home game of his 22-year Arsenal career with a guard of honour from his own players and those of Burnley. It turned out to be a perfect day at the office for Wenger. Arsenal were at their best as the Gunners bow out under Wenger at the Emirates with a resounding 5-0 win over Burnley. Soccer fans have mixed reactions on his departure.
It's a good one for him. It's a good farewell from Arsenal players and the fans as well. So I think Arsene Wenger will live to remember Arsenal. He's been there for the past 22 years. So that game yesterday against Burnley was just a good departure for Arsene Wenger.
At the end of the day, Arsene Wenger tried. 22 years is not easy. He have tried.
Arsene Wenger brought a lot of finesse, not only to English football, to European football. However, two things will be haunting Arsene Wenger: not being able to win any of the European championship for the club, the Winners Cup then, now Europa Cup, and he couldn't win any.
In athletics news, Caster Semenya pulled aside the controversy over a planned rule change in athletics regarding hyperandrogenism to win the women's 1,500 meters and break her own South African record time at the Diamond League meeting in Doha. Semenya won in a record leading time of 3 minutes and 59.92 seconds ahead of Nelly Jepkosgei of Kenya and Habitam Alemu of Ethiopia. Athletics reporter Deji Ogunyinbo says the performance of the African athletes at the IWAF League will set the tone for the African Championships later in August.
Africans were flying form over there in Doha. That's the season opener in one of the Diamond Leagues. And starting with 100 meters, always nice to see Africans parade themselves. The top four, three Africans were there with Marie-Jose Talu, emerged victorious in the season's best and a new personal best of 10.85 seconds. To the middle distance races, Caster Semenya, despite all the controversy, she continued from where she left off at the Commonwealth Games after winning the 800 meters and the 1,500 meter race.
That is a sports analyst from Nigeria wrapping up that report by Samson Omale.
Now let's take you to a story in Uganda where a leopard is on the run for a certain reason, right?
Yeah, it's a very sad story. It actually killed a three-year-old son of a female ranger working in the popular Queen Elizabeth National Park.
Now, the leopard has been searched for by park rangers and also by a lot of people, and the story is now trending on social media platforms. Obviously, we have some responses on this. We have the Vandalist who says, animals are doing the very most. This looks like revenge of sorts to me.
Yeah, we did ask, actually, could this be a result of encroaching of wildlife territory? And Gaba Bokaya says, sorry to the ranger, but authorities should fence all quarters to prevent further disaster.
And from someone, a WhatsApp user, who says this is an incredibly sad story. And Rapal Vazada, I think, was writing also from on Twitter, I think from India or so, says it's very sad as well. Anyways, sympathies are going everywhere. And it's very sad for someone who has a son or a child, a small child.
No, you don't want to imagine that. And the kid was actually 3 years old.
Yeah, it is. Anyways, it's been a pleasure having you aboard. Thanks for all your responses. I am Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.